Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, special guest Evan Miyakawa will join us. If you have the Patreon, you've heard the interview. If you're a Patreon subscriber, thank you. You get that stuff early. We talked to Evan about all things brackets, SEC. Conversation came before the weekend games, but still a pretty timely chat ahead of what the selection committee ended up doing, which was giving Florida the top three seed in the one chance we get to look inside the selection committee's hive mind before selection Sunday. Florida ends up as the number nine overall in a brutal region with Michigan and Houston as the two. You know, a lot of basketball for Houston, at least, especially has happened since then. Two more losses. You know, these things change almost instantly, and that's what's happened here. But that's where the committee was on the Gators heading into Saturday when Florida dispatched of Ole Miss 94-75 for their seventh straight win. I don't think the Gators played their A game in that one, but we have a bunch of ground to cover from a basketball games perspective, and it's been a little while. I appreciate everybody that was patient. I had some family issues and appreciate the patience, but we'll circle back to Kentucky. And that was obviously the second straight rivalry win for Florida after a rout of Georgia and Athens. The Gators led this game wire to wire. Kentucky showed a lot of grit. It's worth noting that like the Wildcats had a week to prepare for Florida. And so this being Florida's closest game in the seven-game winning streak shouldn't have been that surprising considering the Gators were playing on short rest after getting home from Athens late Wednesday night. Didn't do much practicing for Kentucky, to be honest. Very light work, a lot of scout implementation and prep the day before, which is never super ideal. And Florida still led this game wire to wire. I thought if you were going to get, you know, into sort of who was awesome in that game, it kind of interestingly for me a little bit starts with Micah Hanlockton, who I thought gave spectacular minutes for Florida off the bench. And that kind of kept Kentucky's rotation of bigs, which included Malachi Moreno, who dealt with foul trouble, Andrea Jelovic, who I don't think is particularly good at basketball, at least at this level yet, and Modi Abate at bay. And then Micah also like just making life difficult on Otega Owe and Denzel Aberdeen's drivers and making them finish over length. Micah finishes with 2 points and five rebounds and was much more impactful than that overall, had two steals on quick hands and taps that he was able to grab and ultimately finishes with a game high plus 14. Thought he was terrific, even though a lot of the attention rightly will go on Xavier Lee and Urban Klavzar, who collectively went 9 of 18 from downtown, giving Florida a 10 of 28 three-point shooting performance. We'll get to Florida's three-point shooting performance in a second, but, you know, circle the last few games. Obviously, as Florida has started to shoot the ball from the perimeter very well. But all told, Xavier Lee and Klavzar were very difficult to stop from deep. Kentucky neutralized Florida in the paint, actually even Steven with the Gators inside. But Florida won transition points, Florida won bench points, Florida won second chance points, and Florida won points off turnovers, nearly doubling up Kentucky in the latter category. To make sure that even though Kentucky fought hard, they never could get really any closer than 4 points, and then the one time they got to two, who would show up? But of course, Tommy Houck. He goes and drives in for an and one, and then hits a three, and all of a sudden, two Tommy Houck buckets and a Klavsar bucket, and Florida had stretched the lead again. The Gators' defense was tremendous on Owe and Aberdeen, who went a combined 12 for 35, shooting 34% from the field. I thought Florida did an awesome job on Owe in particular, limiting him to 13 points and sort of making him get to his left, where he was a lot more uncomfortable trying to finish, and, you know, making him constantly have to finish through and over length. Florida's bigs continue to play with elite verticality. I know people think, you know, people that watch Florida's bigs think, oh, they must be fouling every possession because they're just so physical, but they're not. I mean, and it has been a trend since a year ago, in February, when the Gator boys got hot, for some really elite coaches to praise Florida's verticality. And that list continues to grow, as Mark Pope mentioned it, but it's Mark Pope, John Shire, Bruce Pearl, Kelvin Sampson, Buzz Williams. This is not a short list. Danny Hurley. Florida just does a tremendous job in their front court on most nights of playing without fouling defensively, and it's part of why Florida's been such an outstanding defense, especially since the game at Cameron, I thought, in the second half when Chinny Lewis shut down Cam and Florida made the big run. I think Florida's been pretty dang good defensively since then. UConn, maybe the one exception where, you know, I think for stretches, Florida played good defensively, but not enough, obviously, to win that game. Although Solo Ball made some tough shots, man. And, you know, shooting 30% on the year just happened to be his night. Florida improved to 40-3 at home since the start of the 2023-24 season. They're actually 41-3 as they slept walk through a South Carolina win. We should talk about whether we're concerned with how Florida played against South Carolina and Ole Miss, and we will. But I didn't want to gloss over the Kentucky win because I thought Florida just did just an absolutely tremendous job of taking care of business against a hungry, desperate team that wanted to make a statement, that that's fan base believed it could win the SEC, and that claim and staking their claim to that, what they believe is their birthright, started in the O'Connell Center, and Kentucky never led. And, you know, I wrote an article about this at Saturday Down South, but I think it's instructive that, like, if a newspaper headline read reigning national champion fights off plucky underdog at home, and you just knew that one team was Kentucky and one team was Florida, I think most of the time, especially a quarter century ago, you would have been like, ah, Kentucky's the reigning national champ and Florida fought hard. Hooray. What a difference really 30 years makes. Florida just one Final Four behind Kentucky in the last 30 years, tied in Natty's in the last 30 years. I'm extending it to make the point to the Kentucky people, extending it from this century where Florida leads in Final Fours and Natty's to back. Because you can give them the Tubby Natty, you can give them the Patino Natty, and it's tied up. But in the last 30, it's still level on Final Fours. Actually, Kentucky is one ahead on Final Fours, my fault, in that 30-year span. Florida is top 10 in wins since the beginning of the century. So is Kentucky. Florida has a better NCAA tournament win percentage than Kentucky in this quarter century. Florida has more NCAA tournament wins than Kentucky. Florida has as many Elite Eight appearances as Kentucky. So even Kentucky could say, well, we're constantly deeper in the tournament more. And the answer to that is no, you aren't. Not this century. So, you know, and Florida's won behind Kentucky in national titles won since black people have been allowed to play. So I think that's a pretty fair line of demarcation. You know, this is incredible legacy building program stuff, what's happening with Todd Golden and this staff. Alex Condon and Ruben Chinyalu. Well, no, sorry, Alex Conan and Tommy Houck. Let's discuss them just for a minute and point out that they are now 57-10 in the last 2 years. And that Florida is 71-16 since getting blown out by Tennessee at the Food City Center in an ice game that I was at in January of 2024. So just a really staggering run of excellence by Florida. I know they're already thinking about how they're going to rebuild it next year, and they want it to be a reload, not a rebuild. They have no intention of sacrificing their excellence with their next roster, nor should they. And I love that their expectation is where fan expectations that aren't always in sync with reality sometimes. Let's be honest, you know, put the fan fanatic. Can't spell fanatic without fan. But I love that Florida's staff demands that excellence out of themselves, and that their expectation is to reload next year. We have plenty of time to talk about that when this season is over. But I think people should start really enjoying what's happening while also appreciating what's happening. Ruben Chinyalu, 15th double-double against Kentucky. He grabbed a 16th, obviously, in Florida's win over South Carolina. Alex Conan added 6th double-double. It was the 7th time this season and the first in SEC play when the Gators had multiple players with a double-double. So Florida's front court was tremendous. The Gators led by as many as 15 in the first half and as many as 16 in the second half. The game never felt precarious except for maybe the quick Kentucky run to cut it to 2. And even then, Florida, you know, put the clamp down on that quick. Gators dominated the glass in the second half. Out-rebounded Kentucky 25-17 on the glass in the second half. And it should be noted that that would have been 25-14, but for some late Kentucky rebounds. So, big win for Florida. Obviously, Kentucky fans made much ado about everything. The refs, their titles that they won before black people were allowed to play, their injuries. Let's see, what else did I hear? Oh, their win streak in Gainesville, which was getting a little ridiculous. In fairness, Florida should not lose 6 straight games to Kentucky at home ever again. And hopefully that doesn't happen. But that's where we're now. We concerned about the response. I thought Florida was a little mentally and physically fatigued in the South Carolina game. I was very glad that that game was at home as it continued to play out. I thought Michi Johnson was sensational. Boogie was so much better than him in the first game, and Michi, point of pride, got Boogie back in the second game. I thought it was one of the weaker Boogie Flan games in quite some time, and a great Michi Johnson game. He had 22 points, got to the free throw line, lived there, had 3 steals, really bothered Florida with his physicality and his ability to get downhill. And Michi's a guy who can finish over length because he's so strong. And I thought he was the best player in the game. I know Ruben Chinyalu had, 17 rebounds and 15 points. I thought Michi Johnson was slightly better overall, mainly because Michi played more. And, you know, maybe it should be a credit to Chinyalu that he did 15 and 17 in 23 minutes. I don't know. I go back and forth on this. Florida did not shoot well against South Carolina, 5 of 19 from 3. One of their worst three-point shooting games in a while, actually. And the Gators win by 14. It was 21 in the second half. So, like, I don't want to be too harsh on Florida. I mean, they ended up winning this game by handily. They trailed very briefly for 45 seconds, 3-0, and then never trailed again. Florida has trailed 7 minutes and 8 seconds in the previous 7 games. It's astonishing. Again, appreciate this level of success because it's quite staggering. But, you know, nitpicking, CJ Ingram and Alex Lloyd were not great when they came in, and South Carolina was able to go on like a 5-0 mini run to close the game. I thought Victor Mikic struggled as well when he got a couple minutes late. And as a result, you know, it wasn't really as pretty as it could have been final score-wise. I think people came in with pretty absurd expectations because Florida had won by 47 in Columbia. Alex Condon was awesome in this game, played 32 minutes, had 20 points. Most of that came in the second half, had 10 rebounds for his seventh double-double. Awesome might be a stretch with the six turnovers, but I thought a couple of them were pretty fluky. There was a Hauk drop, a Hand-Lockton drop, and a Chenilu drop on all good passes. So that's three of them. You know, he still can't have a career high in turnovers and say he played awesome. So I apologize for that mischaracterization. But I thought he was really solid despite the turnovers, especially in the second half. He was much, much better. And Florida grabs that win to complete the season sweep of the Gamecocks. And then on the weekend, so Florida had, you know, 14 turnovers against the Gamecocks, and then they had 19 turnovers, which is an SEC high against Ole Miss. So 33 turnovers in the last two games, way too many. It's why Florida's offensive efficiency numbers actually dipped, even though they scored 94 points in a 77-possession game, which normally would bump you at 1.22 points per possession. But the turnovers, you know, 24.7% turnover rate against Ole Miss, and similarly poor turnover rate, 21% against South Carolina. Florida has got to get back under that. They need to be much more like they were against Kentucky when they have 14.4%. That's much more like it. Or the Georgia game, where, you know, 14 seems like a lot, but they had very few in the second half. So I do think Florida needs to get back to limiting turnovers. You know, the Texas A&M game, obviously a masterpiece against that press, proving they can do it when they're locked in and focused, with only 10 in that game and a 13.9% rate. But I think as Florida plays better teams, they can't afford to give away possessions, no matter how good they are on the offensive glass. And they are still staggeringly good, ranking second in the country in offensive rebounding and third in defensive rebounding percentage. Just incredible rebounding team. And they're now up to fourth in defensive efficiency in KenPom, and they are first or third in adjusted defensive efficiency since January 1st. In Torvik, they're first in the country in Torvik overall since January 1st, followed by Duke, Arizona, and Michigan. So if you want to know, like, who the four big national championship contenders are, there are three projected one seeds: Duke, Arizona, Michigan, and then the Gators. And you're like fourth projected one seed right now in most brackets is like Iowa State, Illinois, or UConn. And UConn is 16th in Torvik since January 1st. But, you know, the committee doesn't just look at predictives. They look at things like wins above bubble, where Florida's lacking a bit. They look at quad 1A, where Florida's 2 and 3. Unfortunately, like the Texas game coming up will be quad 1A when Florida plays it, but if Florida wins it, it will fall out of quad 1A because quad 1A on the road is 1-40 and Texas is 38th or 39th in the net. This is the problem with being very good. Now Florida is fourth in wins above bubble since January 1st, but that's not the standard for the metric. Florida's 15th in wins above bubble overall. So, you know, that was a big one. Remember last year with North Carolina, where they had the one quad one win, but their wins above bubble was substantially better than everyone else on the bubble. There are people who say wins above bubble stinks because it favors mediocre power five teams. And I empathize with that argument immensely and really don't think the committee should value that metric as much. I think you have your quads and you have your predictives and that's enough. But right now the committee uses that, and Florida's is lagging compared to some of the other teams, particularly at the top of the sport, where like Michigan's 1, Arizona's 3, Duke is 2, Illinois is 9, Purdue is 5. That was a big deal to the committee in scrubbing Florida from the 2 line. at bumping Purdue up to the two line, even though like every predictive says Florida is better. These are kind of the little battles that Florida has to look ahead to as they get ready for Texas and they get ready for the huge game against Arkansas, which we'll preview later in the week, at home on Saturday, College Game Day in town for the seventh time. That's the most of any program except for Duke, Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky. Pretty impressive for Florida to be in the top five on game day host. Again, more signs of sort of the SEC royalty status of the game. All right, obviously Urban Klaviyo's kind of emergence has been huge. But I want to note that in this seven-game winning streak, Florida's had only three games where they didn't shoot the three very well. Alabama, 3 of 13, they didn't need the three because they dominated the paint. A&M, 6 of 23, maybe not enough, they dominated the paint. And South Carolina, 5 of 19, where I think they just did objectively had a bad night from deep. Otherwise, they have four, so four of their last seven where they were over 40% or close. Yeah, I mean, the Gators go 9 of 21 in the 47-point win over South Carolina. They go 10 of 26 at Georgia, 10 of 28 against Kentucky, so just under 40. And then 11 of 22 against Ole Miss, which really is kind of like why they were able to get out of that building with a dub, was Florida just shot the damn lights out against the Rebels, 50% from three, 62% from two. Alex Conan, sensational, 24.6 rebounds, joins Chandler Parsons and Pete Roberson as the only players with 24 points, six rebounds, and six assists. 24 points and six assists with only one turnover in the last 25 years of Florida basketball. Pretty impressive. A couple guys that were first-team All-SEC. One was an SEC Player of the Year. It's getting harder and harder to justify keeping Alex Conan off first or second-team All-SEC. I think there's an argument for first-team. I also think human nature will – there will be Florida fatigue after riding Chinyelu and Houck down, and it'll end up being Filon, Acuff, someone – Tyler Tanner, maybe, Jacoby Gillespie, maybe, and Nate Amant, maybe, and then Houck and Chinyelu. And then Conan will have to settle for second team. But Alex has been really good of late. I thought Florida's guards were good in this game. Tommy Houck, though, you know, Mr. Consistent. He's got spotlight on him this week. I think it's his chance to say, hey, I know Darius Acuff is sensational, and he's one of the three best freshmen in the country, at least in this writer's opinion. You know, I think just on the court, it's Cam Boozer, AJ Devonsa, and Darius Acuff Jr. And that's the list right now. I know how good Darren Peterson is, but you have to, you can't be DNP Peterson and be ahead. No, you can't credibly argue that Darren Peterson's been better than Darius Acuff at this point. Does that make Darius Acuff Player of the Year? Well, I don't know. Tommy Houck does everything else, just like he did at Ole Miss when he had 20 points on a really efficient, you know, 6 of 13, 6 of 6 of line. He had 9 rebounds. He had 4 assists, 2 blocks, 2 steals. Just a preposterously good game. And Steady Eddie stuffs the stat sheet. You know, Tommy isn't flashy, and he's not a point guard. So can he win Player of the Year? Yeah. Florida needs to win the league. They need to win the Arkansas game. And then Tommy has to play well in that game. And then I think the discussions start. I do not agree with people who think the award is over. And I think Tommy can prove that this week. But that's where we are heading in to the Texas game. As I mentioned, the committee, selection committee, had Florida in that 9 spot overall. And you know, that's where they are in bracket matrix, which is the aggregate of every bracketologist. Tonight, their average seed continues to be 2.79. So they're behind the bracket matrix 2 seed bunch of Houston, Iowa State, Purdue, and Illinois. Florida at the top of that 3 seed list. I think Florida just keep winning, and it will be hard to keep them off the 2 line. The predictives are so good. But, you know, that certainly is where we are as we get close to March Madness. And that reminds me that it's a good time to go to MyBookie, our friends and partners at MyBookie.ag. We have a unique link that we'll post with this podcast. But with March Madness on the way, there's no better time than now to go over to MyBookie. And, you know, if you're filling out a bracket this year trying to win something real, you know, beyond the bragging rights of being office pool champion, MyBookie's giving away $100,000 in their Madness Bracket Contest. That's real cash, obviously. That's all up for grabs. And they're celebrating 100,000 followers on Instagram with another $10,000 in prizes. So you should go ahead and make sure you follow them over at MyBookie. That would be pretty useful. And if you want to play, you can go over to mybookie.ag and use the promo code Neil500 at mybookie.ag. That way you'll get your first bet covered on the Madness up to $500. If it misses, activate the bet back bonus after you sign up and run it back. There are do-overs at MyBookie thanks to the bet back bonus, as opposed to March Madness where you are one and done. Thank you to our sponsors over at MyBookie. Yeah, so this is a big week. The Gators getting ready to play Texas. Going to preview the Longhorns under Sean Miller. All Gator Florida Basketball Hour previews brought to you by our friends at Game Time Sidekicks. Go over to GameTimeSidekicks.com and check out all their national championship gear. Those guys are awesome. And if you purchase $60 or more, you get a free skinny can koozie of your choice, which is pretty nice. They got Gator stuff in that regard as well. Okay, Texas. Horns. First top 40 KenPom team that Florida has played since Kentucky, obviously. A team that has been pretty good from like a Torvik standpoint, not as awesome since January 1st, where they're 42nd, but that's really because they don't guard. They're 141st in defensive efficiency. They're 6th in offensive efficiency in SEC play and 6th overall in KenPom. It starts with Daylon Swain. He's going to be probably second team All-SEC. He's been spectacular. Big physical wing, shoots it okay, shooting it better than he has his whole career at 34%. Great driver, finishing better than he has in his career, 64% on his twos. Offensive rating in the top 20 in league play. Elite rebounder, top 5 percentile in SEC play on the defensive glass. High steal percentage guy, quick hands, their best defender by a mile. And then lives at the free throw line. Just an excellent player. Actually, probably somebody you got to consider for first team All-SEC, even if it's tough. He's had 3 KenPom MVPs in their last – in their little run here, which has included a 5-1 spurt. Until they lost to Georgia and Athens on Saturday, they had won 5 consecutive games. Granted, none of those came over top 50 KenPom opponents. That's kind of been their bugaboo. They beat – Georgia. But since January 17th, they have 1, 2, 3, 4 losses against the KenPom top 50 and only 1 win. Now, they did double up and have that great week where they beat Alabama and Vandy, including the blowout win of Vandy in the Moody Center. And I think, and the win in Tuscaloosa, which is aging like a fine wine. So they have upper echelon wins, but it's been a while. I think the key for Texas is, it's not just Swain. Like, somebody else has to make shots, whether it ends up being Jordan Pope, who can do it, and it's been in double figures in the last 4 and is shooting really well from 3 in the last 4. He's made 3 of 8, 6 of 11. 9 of his last 15 from 3. Must be nice to have somebody like that sniping out there that isn't just Urban Klausar. Tremont Martin, not as good a shooter, but y'all are familiar with his ability to drive and get to the paint. Cam Heidi is a winner. I love that portal pickup. He's a culture guy. They paid him to get him away from Purdue, and he just has been lethal from deep, making almost 50% of his threes on high volume. He's a guy you have to stick to. If he gets hot, it could be a tough night for Florida, honestly, because then they become just impossible to guard. And when you stick to shooters like that, there are more lanes, and that's how Daylon Swain beat you. This is an exceptionally good offensive team. And Metes Vokiaitis, the FAU transfer, is in the middle of all that. In the middle, he's number two in the country in fouls drawn per 40 minutes, number two in the country in free throw rate. He is going to present some problems with his craftiness and his footwork for Chinyelu and Conan. There is only one of him. So when he comes out of the game, there's not really a second option. Lucina Traore is the guy they had used, but he hasn't played in four games due to an injury, is questionable for the game on Wednesday night. They have not used Declan Derue as much. And so typically when Vokiaitis has to leave games, they go smaller. Kendall Weaver is a guy who I like. He can really guard. He's a glue guy. He does a lot. Simeon Wilshire is a guy you're all going to be familiar with. Was a contributing player at St. John's. Just didn't shoot the ball well enough last year and ended up in the portal. I think that surprised a lot of people for a New Jersey kid. That was one of Patino's big first gets to end up back at Texas. A little curious, but to end up at Texas is a little curious. He's made good on the bet. He has been an impactful and winning player for them. And he's playing about 20 minutes a game and taking what the game gives to him. And he's shooting the ball again at a high level at 35% from three, much more like his freshman year at St. John's than last year where he had the shooting slump. So the Longhorns can shoot it. They do struggle to guard. Again, they're small. You can get into the paint on them. You can get going from outside. But they rebound well. 15th in the country on the offensive glass. 45th in the country on the defensive glass. They're letting opponents shoot 36% from deep. That's near the bottom third of the country. But, you know, as we've mentioned, the Gators aren't necessarily a team that lights you up. So not a terrible matchup for Texas. They're not going to turn Florida over. They're 339th in turnover percentage forced. So as long as Florida doesn't have unforced errors, this should be a very tight game. KenPom projects it as such, a five-point contest. It's been a while since Florida was pushed in that manner. I think that would be a good thing for the Gators. And, you know, if Florida wins, then they can clinch a share, at least, of the SEC title or perhaps the title outright on Saturday night on their home floor in the O-Dome. But, you know, a really good Texas team that's going to the NCAA tournament first in the Moody Center. It's going to be an incredible environment, I'm sure, as they welcome in the reigning national champs. Huge game under Sean Miller. It'll be kind of super bullish for them. How do the Gators respond to that environment? I think they'll play pretty well, but definitely a big test. Okay. I'm going to move over to the Evan Miyakawa interview. I will sign off before that. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts and enjoy my conversation with Evan.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.